League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood. We are all still in Las Vegas. We also have a special guest tonight. Spoon, what was his name?
David Hum.
David Hum, also looking hum. Over our shoulder to Hum. Like Hum, yes. Like Hum song.
Yeah, okay. H-U-M-M.
David Hum is our special guest tonight on the Green 19 podcast. Ryan, I can tell you on the strip. So we are all still in Las Vegas right now. The Packers have presumably headed out and have a long 13 days ahead of them after a 17-13 loss to the Las Vegas Raiders. They now drop to 2-3. They had 10 days to get ready for this game against one of the lesser teams in the AFC and had ample opportunities to win and still walk out of here with a loss. Spoon, let me just kind of start with you. Your general assessment of the game that dropped the Packers to 2-3.
Well, it was a pretty lousy game. I mean, I wouldn't say it was really well played or anything.
Right.
It was two bad teams. And when I say bad, I mean I don't think they're devoid of talent. I think they're devoid of any semblance of how to be a winning team. And so that's kind of what we saw tonight, was two teams who really don't know how to be winners.
Don't know how to be winners. That pretty much sums it up. It looked like two and three teams. Teams that maybe should have been, you know, Packers have been 1-3. I'm trying to remember their record coming into it even. Ryan, your general assessment walking out of Allegiant Stadium tonight?
I think the Packers are who we thought they were. And I don't think they're a good team or a bad team. I think what they are is a young team. This is what you get with a young team. And I said it last week, what the same that was true all offseason doesn't just change because the game's – start being played and they count. But we said all offseason, this is a young team. It's the youngest team in the NFL, according to the initial 53-man roster. It is a team that has no idea how to win, because you have to learn that in this league. It's not a birthright. You don't just come into this league knowing how to win. That's a trial by fire. It's a process. They haven't really gone through it in five games. And so this is what you get with a young team that doesn't know how to win yet. They lose a road primetime game against a terrible Raiders team. The Raiders had Josh Jacobs go for 69 yards on 20 carries. They had Davante Adams go for 45 yards on four catches and four targets. But watching the Raiders is kind of like watching the Packers some weeks, where you're wondering, why aren't they getting Aaron Jones the ball more? Christian Watson's on the field. Why aren't they throwing to him? Like, the Raiders have really good players, and for large swaths of this game, Davante Adams was ignored. Josh Jacobs didn't have a big night. And the Packers still lost because they're a young team. They don't know how to win yet. So this is what you're going to get, not just this week, but this season. From week to week, you're really not going to know what to expect, and that's just the reality of a young team.
With that reality of a young team, let's go ahead and jump right into this discussion. Jordan Love went 16 of 30 for, I want to say, 182, zero touchdowns, three interceptions. And you kind of walk through these three interceptions piece by piece. But let's just start with the offense as a whole. Defense held this Raiders team to 17 points. As you said, Josh Jacobs, Davante Adams, both relatively held in check. Jair Alexander had a pretty telling comment after the game, and he said it. I feel like context is important. he was saying it not in a way that he was throwing the offense under the bus, but he said, I think it's pretty obvious that we're going to have to be the ones on defense to score touchdowns. This is a young team, a young offense, still finding their mojo, and we're going to have to be the ones to score and keep the opponent from scoring. And I asked him a little bit later, like, do you have to remind yourself of that at times, that this is a young offense and you might have to be patient? And he said, yeah, because we're old on defense, so we're just going to have to be the ones to take care of it, essentially, is what he was saying. Is that tangible, Spoon? Is that feasible? Is that sustainable, I guess, is really the answer.
No, it's not. I mean, I agree with him that the defense isn't young, and I think there's some redeeming value to how the defense played. I don't think that it was just the Raiders who shut down Josh Jacobs and Adams. I think they actually did a pretty nice job of taking those two guys out of the game. It's why there were other things that were open, you know, some of the perimeter things that they were able to do. I think we're there because of what they were doing to try to take Adams out of the game and try to play Jacobs. You know, and then they lost Quay Walker, and that hurt them a lot. But I also think that I think the thing that's not being considered here is that I think they really got failed by the coaching staff, especially on the offensive side. I mean, their offensive line, you know, the tackles are young, but they got three guys inside who should be able to move people. And, you know, they got a running back who's been around for a while. A quarterback is a first-year starter, but, you know, he's also been around. And I just don't see, like, the type of things that help him. I sort of feel like he didn't have a lot of guys open. They didn't really scheme anything open. They get down to the 3-yard line after that Christian Watson play. And, you know, the Raiders come out in a 5-man front and they run it right into their gut twice. You know, Jordan Love, I don't know if he didn't have a check there where he could go to a different play or what. But I sort of feel like they're a better team than what they – this is kind of hard to say. They're a more talented team, but they're a bad team right now. You know, they're more talented than they are showing, and they're just playing bad.
I get what you're saying. Their ceiling is high, but their floor is real low right now.
Yeah, but it's not just that they're not reaching their potential. It's that they're playing – there's just stuff that's – messed up. You know, there's things on offense that are inexplicable, and then there's things on defense too where, you know, you wonder how can they let a guy walk into the end zone for the, you know, what, the third straight time that a guy's been down at the 3-yard line where the guy doesn't even get touched going into the end zone. It's things like that where you're like, what's going on? They're just — that's bad.
Two words. Young team. And I kind of
feel
like – I'm
not buying that.
Yeah, that's my opinion. This is a young team. It's the youngest team in the NFL is what you get with young teams. That's just my opinion. I think that this coaching staff is kind of figuring out what to do with this young team too. And I'm with you, Spoon, that, you know, they – and I have an Aaron Jones tonight. That didn't help. He's awfully important to their offense. But it was very clear that Matt LaFleur was going to go ahead with what he told his team that he was going to do this week going in, which was run the ball. Five of the first 7 plays of the game were running plays to Aaron Dillon. And then he touched the ball. He carried the ball 3 more times in the first half. And what they do on the first drive of the third quarter after that Rudy Ford interception, they come right out. They run the ball again. And it was helping with keeping them on schedule down in distance, but A.J. Dillon's not Aaron Jones. they got away from the game plan, and it kind of felt like Matt LaFleur as a play caller was just searching, wondering how can he get something going, and it didn't work. I mean, he didn't do a good job of that. It just, to me, this is what the expectation is for a young team. It's going to be high and it's going to be low, to your point, Cassidy. To get back to your original question on the what Jaire Alexander said about the defense, I think in the confines of tonight, 17 points allowed, that should be enough in this league to win a game. It's not sustainable there. When you look at the totality of five games and how they arrived at 2-3, we all said it going into the season, this is an offense with a first-time starting quarterback, and he's surrounded by rookies. They're not going to get it overnight. It's going to take time. This defense is not the same situation. They have veterans on this defense. They have first-round picks. They have high-priced free agents. Devondre Campbell has not been available, and that hasn't helped in the middle of the defense. But they've got a lot of veteran experience on that defense. This defense on the totality has not held up its own end of the bargain. It is not, the Detroit Lions loss, the Atlanta Falcons fourth quarter. There's weeks it's looked good against the New Orleans Saints. It played well. Tonight it played well. But as a totality, it needs a lot more consistency, because the expectation coming into this season was that this veteran defense needed to hold the water until this young offense got traction, and it can't be a week-on, week-off thing. It has to be all the time.
That's fair, but isn't there also something to, complimentary football? I mean, let's talk about the one touchdown drive that they gave up tonight. It was an 8-minute, 28-second, 14-play drive, and then they get one play off. Jordan Love throws an interception, and they have to come back out and defend on goal to go from the 7 or the 5, I think it was, within the 10. And they actually held them to a field goal right there. So, but I guess that's your point. Like, this was one of the weeks where it was on.
That's what I said. Yeah, in the confines of tonight, they did the job. 17 points. That was an incredible red zone stand right at 8.5-minute drive, 14 plays. One play, you're back on the field inside the 10-yard line. Tremendous. But it has to be that way every week. It can't just be that way tonight. And I think that's what Jaire Alexander was getting at, which was this offense might take some time because it is really, really young. That's just the reality. It might take some time. What they did tonight has to be all the time on defense. And they can win some games if they do that. If not, it's going to be a lost season.
Spoon, I can see your face, and I can see the thoughts running through your mind. What are they?
Yeah, no, I said my piece. I don't really have a lot to add to that. You know, one of the things that is damning about the defense is that, they've given up 62 points in the first half this season. And compared to the 29 that, the offense has scored, that's a bad ratio. So they've been outscored like 62-29 in the first half. So they're always trailing. I thought the defense, I thought their game plan was pretty good. I thought they played their butt off, but there's always something that's just a little off with them. There's always some kind of thing where they can't just make the killer play that closes a game. Like that drive you were talking about, and they had that chance where I thought Keyshawn Nixon had a chance to make a huge play. Devontae Adams kind of did that slant in front of him, and Nixon could have broken on that ball and probably taken it to the house if he'd have read it correctly. There's just always like one thing that can't get them completely over the hump when the Packers really need them. I still think, if they'd had Quay Walker, the game might have been a little bit different. You never know. Although I thought Eric Wilson played pretty well. I just get this feeling that, they're not – they have some young talent, some really good young talent, but – youth shouldn't be the excuse it should be why can't they get a guy open? I mean, I don't think that's youth. I mean, Love, we had such a good vantage point up here, and I kept watching the receivers and watching the secondary, and I'm like, they can't get anyone open. You know, they're not really scheming anyone open. The Raiders are without two of their top corners, and they're not winning anything. So I was like really kind of wondering what the heck was going on, just from a coaching standpoint.
You know, that my question is that coaching?
Yeah. I mean, to me it is.
Spoon, go ahead, to your Ryan. Point on the defense, let's not forget mm-hmm. tonight. They held their own, right? But let's not forget tonight. They got help with Daniel Carlson clanking a 52-yard field goal late in the game off the right upright. The New Orleans Saints game. Let's not forget, they played really well. You hold a team to, what was it, 17 points? Same thing as tonight. They played really well. You should win that game. Saints missed a 46-yard field goal that could have very well won that game. You know, it's not been entirely buttoned up shut down. There have been cracks, and sometimes those cracks have come late in games, and they've kind of been let off the hook by not great opponents. So,
it's sort of like growth. Look at what the Raiders did. I mean, they picked off three balls. You know, they didn't play all that great. But when the time came, you know, they made the interceptions. And Rudy Ford made that tremendous play that should have turned the whole game around for the Packers. And, you know, and they can't score a touchdown. And to me, that's just like a microcosm of their season. They, you know, maybe one side does something pretty well and the other side, you know, what's the bet?
Do you mean that Rudy Ford didn't return it for a touchdown?
No, they didn't score on that, right?
They did.
That was after the Rudy Ford. Okay, it was the other drive they didn't
score. They got a short field goal. Or they had a short field goal at the 34-yard line. They didn't score.
It was after the Watson play. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. That might have been the first game I've ever seen where the whole turning point of the game was a horse collar tackle.
Right. I
mean, yeah. What a that smart was the idea.
Right? Marcus Peters, he knows the situation. You got to get him down by any means necessary. Yeah. That whole game turned on that horse.
If there's any question that Christian Watson's hamstring's not 100%, that was it. Because he should have blasted right by everybody.
And he said that afterwards. He was like, I can't, you know, worry about a horse collar. He's like, I should have won that foot race. Like, I should have beaten him, you know? And 9 times out of 10, you feel like you would. But to your point, Spoon, you know, it's the hamstring. Do you think that should be like an NBA rule where, like, he had an unfettered lane to the end zone? The horse collar? Do you think it should be like, count the basket, count the touchdown?
Yeah. No,
the 3-yard line, or no, he got brought down at the 6, and then the penalty moved him to the 3 because it was half the distance to the goal.
Right.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is Giannis would have finished that with an and one.
And then bring Romeo Dobbs over. Bring Romeo Dobbs over.
He might have missed the free throw, but he would have. It would have been a slam dunk.
Do like a pick and roll to Dobbs with a lateral.
Yeah, you go.
I mean, I just. The guy who I saw take that ball in Philadelphia and run past that entire secondary and the guy I saw run this one was different. You know, he's just not back yet. I mean, he still rose fast and you know, he got it 77 yards.
He initially outran 3 of them. I think there was.
Yeah, he did.
Yards after the catch. And so.
You know, he missed 3 games too to start the season. And there is such a thing as football shape. That's a long run, 80 yards. You know,
that is.
So he beat those first 3, but he might have ran out of steam at the end there. I mean, that's not a play. It's not a sprint that guys often make in games.
Watson said, you know, I've got to outrun him. I've got to make that play. Jair Alexander said, you know, there's a couple of different plays. Like, we had to get off the field and we didn't. Rasul Douglas took the blame for the loss, basically, saying that he should have picked off Garoppolo on a certain throw and shut the game down there. Is there, if you're the Packers, is there Are you pleased with guys taking individual responsibility, or is there worry that now they're going to go out there and try to be almost independent contractors to make the play? And especially on defense, you know, Spoon, you made a great point about Darnell Savage a couple weeks ago. You know, he's got to stop looking for the interception and just play the play. If Jair Alexander and Rasul Douglas and the other guys on defense, but especially their two leaders in the secondary, are thinking going into a game, we've got to score and we've got to make the play to turn this game around, could that end up biting you in the butt, so to speak?
Not if it's Jair Alexander or Rasul Douglas, because that's what those two guys, you want them. You know, if they're going to do something and they're going to take a chance, those are the two guys I want. If I'm, you know, the coaching staff, that's okay. You know, Rasul Douglas is going to play the ball so well. And Alexander, he didn't look like he was 100% either. Every time I saw him, he was stretching out on the sideline or, you know, outside
even
the huddle.
Even in between plays. Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it, is some of these guys have to start saying, what am I being told to do, and what do I need to do to make a play, to change a game? Now, Savage is one of those guys who just do what you're told. But some of the other guys, you know, they have some guys who are capable of making play. Rudy Ford is jumping some routes. You know, he's playing pretty smart and watching stuff. So they need more guys to make plays, big plays.
I mean, speaking of Rasul Douglas, he drew the Davante Adams job on Monday night. We kind of thought that would be Jair Alexander. But they played sides. Rasul Douglas stayed on the right side, Jair Alexander on the left. And we saw the Raiders shift Davante over to Rasul's side more often than not to get him off Jair and put him on Douglas. And Douglas kind of held his pail there. I think he ended with like 4 tackles, 2 pass breakups, and he caused a couple more incompletions. I mean, until that touchdown drive late in the third quarter, Davante Adams had 1 target. So he was getting kind of covered up. I mean, if you're a defense, you walk away going, we kept Davante Adams in check all night, especially if you're Rasul Douglas. And what's the, like, what was it for?
45 you know? Yards is a good night on Davante Adams. To your question on you know, accountability and ownership, I think the positive is that each of these guys are looking within themselves. What can they do? It's not finger pointing on this team. It's not even what Jair Alexander said. What can the defense do? Because this is a young offense. We need to help them. There's a lot of accountability, and that's always a good thing. And let's remember, this is a team that did not vote on season captains. This is a team that is young and is searching for leadership within the locker room to emerge. And at 2-3, it's a really good time for that to start happening. So for them to be inward like that, it's a positive thing.
And then I'm looking as well, they held I know you went over Josh Jacobs' numbers, but I'm just looking at the rushing numbers as a whole. 29 rushes for 96 yards, 3.3 average per rush for the Raiders. This is a Packers run defense that we have justifiably been hard on through the first 4 weeks. Granted, Raiders run offense has not been great. But can you build off that if you're a defense? Like, okay, we kind of found our footing and we found a way to keep at least last year's leading rusher in check. I mean, Jacobs finished averaging 3.5 yards per carry. Can you build off that if you're the run defense and go, hey, we've done it, we've seen what works, now let's do it again?
Maybe. I thought that their plan early on was Quay Walker up sort of as like a fifth guy or sixth guy at the line of scrimmage. He shot a gap really early. I think they were going to have him and bring safety up and make sure they stopped the run. But you know, you can't live by that. You can use it. One thing it really showed was that anytime they got to third and long, it was, they were getting after it. You know, they were getting after Garoppolo. I was like, okay, what is Rashawn Gary going to do here? You know, third and long. And they just kept beating the Raiders. So, I mean, if that isn't the recipe the rest of the way for them to be a good defense, I don't know what is. Stop the run and get to third down, because they are a really good pass rushing team.
Yeah, I felt like they were teeing off on third downs there for a while. In fact, back-to-back drives, they sacked Garoppolo on third down and forced the Raiders to punt. And then, you know, they'll go into Denver for their next game. I feel like the opportunity's there to do that again against Russell Wilson and that Broncos offense. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's just kind of wrap up defense here. We saw Darnell Savage go out as well. He immediately was limping. It was a play that got kind of thrown into double coverage with him and Jair Alexander. I want to say it was Jacoby Myers that caught the pass, and looked like Savage came down weird on his ankle. I'm not exactly sure. I need to go back and watch it. But limped off to the side immediately. Jonathan Owens came in. I didn't watch Owens a ton. I did see them put Rudy Ford as the deep safety a little bit more than he has been in previous weeks, I guess just because Savage was not there. Did either one of y'all happen to kind of catch what Owens did? I mean, this is the guy that we had kind of talked about a possibility of getting cut when they need to make roster space. Did he do anything to help himself tonight?
I saw him get blown out of the water on a goal line play, and then another run, he got cracked back by a wide receiver. That's all I remember about his day. I didn't see anything, you know, spectacular. You know, at one point they had Dallin Leavitt in the game because they were going to their dime defense with three safeties. So, you know, I don't know. You know, they need a healthier Stokes back. That can't hurt them. They need Quay Walker back. I asked him, he was really reticent to talk about what happened and just said he twisted his knee. So, I mean, usually if a guy has a really bad knee injury, he's not standing on the sideline, you know, for the whole second half. So I'm assuming he just sprained his knee. I guess we'll find out after the bye, but he is a really key player for them.
Last note on defense, kind of saw the harsh reality of this being a business at times tonight in the locker room, because earlier today, after finding out that Darren Jones wasn't going to be able to play, they needed to bring up Patrick Taylor. Patrick Taylor's out of elevations. They had to put him on the active roster. This is something we had talked about being a possibility anyways, but it happened on the road. They cut linebacker Justin Hollins to make space for Patrick Taylor on the roster. Justin Hollins was already in Vegas with the team. So we walk into the locker room tonight. He's sitting in his locker. His bags are packed. He's ready to go, and he's got to catch a ride back to Green Bay with the team after getting cut. I mean, that's got to hurt. I'm very curious where he watched the game from or what he did during the game. Because he was just kind of sitting there.
I thought I saw him on the sideline, I thought. But I'm not sure if he was allowed, or maybe he was in the stands or something. Maybe they're going to re-sign him to the practice squad. I don't know. We'll see.
He could clear waivers. Yeah. I mean, that's how they grabbed him last year, was when the Rams cut him and Packers grabbed him off waivers. But let's flip Jordan Love now. Three interceptions. The first one looked like he didn't see the linebacker coming. He was looking left for Dobbs, I believe it was. Is that right, Ryan? Was it Dobbs? And didn't see the linebacker coming from the right. Yeah. One of them was a tip. Those are going to happen. You know, you can question about leaning Watson. And then the last one was the play that ended the game into the end zone. Ryan, I know you kind of walked through these in your story. What did each interception kind of tell you about where Jordan Love is five games into his first season as a starter?
Well, the most significant one was the last one. The worst one was the first one. That was ghastly to just throw it right at the linebacker, not see him. It wasn't, you know, the linebacker wasn't even that hit. He was in the middle of the field and the route. He should have been in the
right
line. And it just he didn't see the field, and that's something to keep an eye on, because something that Jordan Love did extremely well through the first 2 weeks was take care of the football. 6 touchdowns, no interceptions. And he's, since then, last 3 games, he's got 2 touchdowns, 6 picks, 3 tonight. That's, you know, that's a young quarterback. You see this with young quarterbacks throughout the league. They struggle at times being consistent with ball security. But that's got to get better, because the 3 picks tonight were the story of the game. Matt LaFleur said in the opening comments, you throw 3 picks, it's tough to win that game. So, you know, the lack of field vision, the first one. I thought the second one, I understand that it's in catch-up mode. It was second and long, quite long. But Marcus Peters was all over Christian Watson. Now, you want your receiver to make a play, and there was times tonight that Christian Watson sure looked like he could have fought harder for the football. But still, it was very tight coverage and not the best place to throw the ball. And when you throw into tight coverage like that, bad things can happen. It gets deflected, gets picked off. The last interception of the game I found really fascinating, because watching it live, Jordan Love had a lot of open field in front of him. And he had 2 options. He had Luke Musgrave there in position to block. And he had 2 options. I mean, he could have made it to the sideline, lived the play another down, probably could have got even more yards if he cut up the field. And there's 45 seconds left. Time to, you know, it could have been a good 10-yard gain. You're at the 35. You're getting close to the red zone now. You got some easier shots at the end zone. He decides to put the game on one throw and throws essentially a jump ball. And I understand Christian Watson is 6'4", and Meek Robertson is 5'9". You might like that in a jump ball scenario one-on-one, but with the game on the line, a jump ball, when you've got free yards there, it's usually not a bad thing to take the sure thing. And he passed up the sure thing for a jump ball. That to me is a young guy in a situation that, you know, he's played a little bit at this point, but it's still relatively new. That made a split second decision that went with the, you know, we're in Vegas, went with the lower odds of making a successful play. So ball security as a whole, we talked about it before the season. It was good through 2 weeks. It's been very poor the last 3 weeks. It needs to get better.
Let me pose a question or two, and I know fans are going to pull their hair out when they hear me ask this. Is there some positives to a first-year starter? And I know he's not a rookie, so that has to be taken into account. He's been in the system for a few years. But is there a positive to a first-year starter throwing some picks in his first year when those throws are figuring out his angles, his windows, his receivers?
If he learns from it, yes. You know, if you are testing your boundaries to learn your boundaries, and then you're able to stay within your boundaries, that's positive growth. And that's what Jordan Love needs, is positive growth. If he doesn't learn from it, and we have no idea sitting here right now going into the bye week in week 6, and then we have no idea if he'll learn from it or not. If he doesn't learn from it, no, that's a death nail for a quarterback in this league. So the stakes are pretty big. I mean, it's either positive growth or it's a real problem, and we'll just have to find that out as it goes.
Yeah. Whether or not he learns from it, that's a very, very good point, because that kind of leads into my next let me pose a question here. Tell me if I'm just wilding. Spoon, that's a phrase that the kids use. It means when you're being a little delusional, you're just wilding out here.
I feel like I'm young and I've never heard that before, so you're teaching me.
That's what the TikTokers use.
Wilding. All right.
Yeah. good friend, I'd say good friend, this is probably, I think, the first time, Rasputin on Twitter was able to pull these numbers together for us. Through five games in their first years as a full-time starter, Rodgers and Love have the same record, 2-3. Aaron Rodgers passing touchdowns, 9. Jordan Love's passing touchdowns, 8. Rodgers rushing touchdowns, 2. Love's rushing touchdowns, 3. So that's the same amount of touchdowns. Rodgers interceptions, 5. Love, 6. Love has lost no fumbles. Rodgers had lost 1. Rodgers passing yards, 1209. Love's 1083. Rodgers, 82. Love's 109. So pretty similar through five games. But, Spoon, to Ryan's point, what does Jordan Love learn from it? So with that being said, when do you kind of need him? When do you need, if you're the Packers, to feel confident, when do you need to see him make the turn from learning to have learned?
Well, the entire year is a learning situation. So, I don't know whether there's a revolving or pivot place. What I want to see from him, and this is the part that would bother me if I was them, is that he continues to lead balls up short. Like, he tries to put too much air under these shots. You know, the one to Watson, I had no problem with that, because from where I was standing, I thought that was going to be a touchdown. I thought he was going to hit him in the back of the end zone, up high, and Watson was going to make that play, but he just floated it. It was a terrible throw. The other deep ball down the middle, that fell short. I realize he got hit, but not before he threw it. He was able to follow through. He's got to learn. There's no way he can overthrow Christian Watson. Just throw it as far as you freaking can if you were him. That's what I'd be telling him if I were the coaches. And that's something that they have to keep working on with him. And that's something he's got to, if he wants those underneath passes to be available, he's got to hit those deep ones. And those are so critical, and he's missing. So, to me, that's a big learning thing. And I want to, if he's truly learning, then we'll see that start to improve.
You've talked about the deep ball, or we all have talked about the deep ball a few times. Is it – I understand what you're saying. You can't overthrow Christian Watson, but it might not always be Christian Watson as the option on the deep threat. So what else does he need to do to kind of find the sweet spot there with that ball?
One thing I should have mentioned, the ball he threw to Watson deep that went right through Watson's hands, that was a beautiful throw. That was the kind of throw he needs to make every time. That was on Watson for dropping that. No, it's not always going to be like that, but most of your guys, it makes you, question why he's kind of lollygagging some of those throws. You know, what is the reason and why is it continuing? That's the part I wonder about.
It's interesting. I don't know that this is directly correlated, because I think that, it reminds me of Jordan Love's very first training camp, where Matt LaFleur kind of exasperated over and over again was saying, let it rip. Guy needs to let it rip. And I don't, he never really explained much what it meant. I think that if Matt LaFleur meant hit the last step in your drop, let it go. We've seen a lot of improvement with that. I mean, he's not off schedule or off time. His timing's gotten a lot better. But if let it rip means chuck the dang thing, get it down the field, stop leaving these short, he needs to let it rip more. He needs to just let it full go. The thing is, he's got a strong arm. it's not a lack of arm strength. The guy can whip it all over the field. We've all seen that. It's not like he can't make the throw. Needs to let it rip.
Yeah, one of the things I see is that, you know, he sort of mimics Rodgers' sort of three-quarters delivery. You know, Rodgers, towards the end, you know, in the latter years, he wasn't so as much over the top. And he was finding different arm angles. And I think, like, the three-quarters delivery got him some accuracy. But the ball shot off his fingers, you know, in that situation. He could still, you know, he could still really put some laser on that. And I don't think Love quite has that ability. And so he does have a really strong arm, but it's a different kind of strong arm. And so I wonder if he's just kind of mimicking Rodgers too much and trying to do what he did with a different skill set. I don't know. I'm curious.
That's an interesting question. Like, you know, do we see him maybe start as he develops? Because there's been things he's done and done well that we've all gone, oh, wow, that looks like 12. Does he need to develop using the good things he learned from Rodgers, but also kind of figuring out what works for him as well? Because, you know, he said that, but you can say it. When you get out there, you know, 3 years of training probably clicks back in, and that's what takes over. I don't know if there's anything to this. It's just something I found a little interesting. Christian Watson ended the night as the leading receiver because of 91 yards. Luke Musgrave actually had the most receptions, 6 receptions on 7 targets. Christian Watson had 3 receptions on 7 targets, but he had that huge one that gave him a huge chunk play. When we were talking about guys taking responsibility, you know, Christian Watson said, I had too many targets to not have that many receptions. So he's, you know, kind of taking it upon himself. Who have we talked about, though, over and over as being Jordan Love's security blanket to be there when things go wrong? Romeo Doubs.
Where was he?
He
had 1 catch on 4 targets. That 1 catch was for 4 yards. And I'm trying – I think one of those targets – was a throwaway, but you know they have to say a receiver in the area. I'm going back to my notes. I'm pretty sure
dropped one too,
and then he dropped one.
I remember that first catch. I think it was in the second half, and I was shocked that it was his first catch. I mean, I just hadn't registered. They didn't have a catch yet, and it's like
and then one of them was the interception.
Which wasn't on Romeo Doubs, but.
Right. So, and then I'm looking to see what some of the other ones were. It was a 3rd and goal from the 5. And he had Doubs top left and an ISO read in the slot. And he was rolling left, and he threw it out of the back of the end zone.
Yeah, he wasn't really open. That was the one where they ran it 2 times with Dylan.
Yeah.
After the Christian Watson.
And then there was another throwaway down the sideline. So there's your 3 misses, the interception, a drop, and a throwaway out of the back of the end zone.
I sometimes wonder if they're spreading the passing game around a little too much. I kind of like what they did in the second half after that 77-yard catch for Christian Watson, where they intentionally called shot plays to follow up to Christian Watson. Why wouldn't you? He's their best receiver. Be intentional about it. Call the shot play, you know, and it didn't work. And part of that's on Jordan Love, part of that's on Christian Watson. But I said it last week. Offensive football in this league is about getting the ball to your best players and letting them make plays. That's what you got to do. And when you're spreading it around a lot, that's a good thing. It's, you know, you don't want it to be the way that it was for a lot of years with Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams, especially because they don't have a Davante Adams on this team right now that warrants 15 targets.
Do the Raiders either? Sorry.
Yeah, right. Well, the Raiders, yeah, Davante Adams needed more than 4 targets. He caught all 4 of his targets. It was befuddling that he didn't get the ball more. But somewhere on the scale of Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams to how much they're spreading it all around now and until the second half tonight, not been all that intentional about just dialing it up for their best players and getting them the ball. I think it needs to fall somewhere in the middle of that spectrum, because they do need to be intentional about getting their best players the football.
Jaden Reed didn't get – I think he got one target. Where was he?
He had two interceptions.
I know they had to play a lot of double tight ends to account for Max Crosby. We should talk about that too, because to me that was a big failure on their part as well. But yeah, that's probably why Reed was not as active.
You know who had five targets tonight? Patrick Taylor. Two catches for 5 yards. Romeo Dobbs had four targets. Every single game, Romeo Dobbs needs more targets than Patrick Taylor. Every single game.
Ben Sims had as many catches as Romeo Dobbs.
Yeah.
One.
Heck of a play made on that, though.
Nice.
Whoa.
Nice broken tackle.
Okay. It was like a weird sound. Let's talk about the double tight ends then, to account for Max Crosby. I'm trying to remember how many sacks. Let me pull it up that Crosby ended with. I want to say it was just one, and the Raiders had two. Crosby had one. Raiders had two total, because Mooring also had a sack.
He had three tackles for loss. He was in the backfield all day in the run game. I thought he was really devastating in the run game.
So let me ask this. As you said, had to have some double tight ends to account for Crosby, and I know you've got to just find a way to stop him. The sack he had, he beat Ben Sims for the sack. And so do you consider maybe like bringing in an extra offensive lineman for that? Or do you just what? Can you can't do that all game, though, can you?
No, but they could have if they wanted to go to that power game. Why wasn't that part of it? And try to run it at Crosby or you know, bring in Yosh Nyman or something. I don't know. It just didn't seem like they tried a lot of different stuff. There wasn't anything. They had some kind of game plan and none of it worked. You know, other than that drive where A.J. Dillon finally started getting some yards. But that didn't last very long.
Right. Again, does that go back to coaching or what the players were doing or not doing?
Yeah, coaching. You know, if I had the chance, I wasn't in LaFleur's press conference, or I guess if I was going to be there tomorrow, which I'm not, I want to know if he's giving him a chance to check out of some of these plays and, you know, let him give him a little bit more freedom, because some of the plays just don't look like they're going to work. You know, the way the Raiders lined up, I don't know. I just wonder about that.
He may go, I finally got a quarterback. I can tell what to do. He ain't checking out of nothing.
Right, exactly.
In fact,
my offense.
Right. Now that I think about it, and I'm sure there was more, but I try to keep notes of, like, you know, anything I see the offense doing at the line and just kind of what Love is doing. I only noted, and again, I'm sure there was more, I only noted him canning a play one time. Like, and so
– his hands?
Yeah, you know, where they, like, kind of do the – and then he goes up and gives them a different play.
Well, remember what Matt LaFleur said about the opener when he was asked how many times did Jordan Love can? He said none.
Yeah. Do you think that's just Love – I don't want to say not being confident in the offense yet, but not knowing? Well, I don't want to say that yet either, because this is his fourth year. He should know it, right?
Not being given the opportunities. So they – you know, there's certain things you have to look for when you can a play. So, you know, they tell him if it's overloaded on the right side, you know, on the strong side, can the play and go to the other side or something like that. Maybe they're not giving him a lot of options. You know, maybe they're just telling them run it the other way. Well, sometimes a can just be, okay, instead of running right, we're going to run left because the defense's strength is to the right. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers had cans where, you know, if a, you know, he saw a corner blitz coming, you know, he would alter a route and have a guy run right into the blitz. So, you know, I don't know if they're doing that for Jordan Love or not.
I guess that was my question. When you say they're not giving him options, do you mean they're not giving him a player on that side to check to if he needs to?
No, I mean options like maybe they're not giving him enough options to, you know, check out of plays, out of bad plays, potential bad plays.
Like Matt LaFleur said that it's – Matt LaFleur said that not every play comes with a can option. So there's play calls. Every play is a play call. Some plays have can options and some don't. And it, to me, it feels like floaties on a young quarterback, trying to keep him safe, trying to keep him within, you know, focused within the simple things. Because cans are complicated. But, yeah, not every play has can options.
Yeah, well, they did with Aaron Rodgers.
Yes, you know, they don't not every play this season in the Jordan Love season has a can option.
Yeah.
I get that, but, like, at some point, don't you just have to trust that he can know it? And you know, I get you don't want to handicap him by giving him a long play, but are you handicapping him, to Spoon's point, by not giving him options either? And so,
well, your offense sucks right now, so something, you know.
I'm not personally alarmed that that point's not in his fifth start of the season. I think it's still early, and I think that Matt LaFleur probably has a better feel for when Jordan Love's ready for that than anyone. If this is December.
Not more than me.
Not more than Twitter.
Although, Spoon, you haven't yet, you're due. You haven't yet predicted the opening play yet. I'm still waiting.
No, I sure haven't.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that. But, you know, if this is December, it's been most of the first season, and it's not, then okay. There's a much larger catalog of experience and snaps and recall to fall back on. Fifth game, personally, I'm not too alarmed yet.
Well, we like to nitpick. Guys, we had actually – no, I did have one other thing I wanted to talk about on special teams.
You know, I do have to catch a plane in the morning, okay?
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't care. On the punt return, at one point, we saw Keyshawn Nixon back with Jaden Reed. I asked him about it, and he said, they've been kicking away from me. We just wanted to give me an opportunity. And so do you think we see that more and more, like seeing Keyshawn Nixon on punt return with Jaden Reed, if teams are going to keep kicking away from him on kickoff? Because that's what he made it sound like the reasoning was there.
Reed was back with him on punts, are you saying?
Yes. The two of them were back there together on a punt return.
Yeah. Well, you do – yeah, you do that with a team that has a punter who can put it in any direction. And A.J. Cole, man, did he have a couple of really nice punts. But, yeah, it's not a bad idea. I don't know if you get enough blocking out of that. Maybe it's just a change-up. I don't know.
Yes. Well, like we said, we do head into a bye now. Spoon has a plane to catch. I'm just kidding. So we're going to get ahead and get out of here. Guys, any final thoughts as the Packers head into their bye week before heading to Denver? And what are you doing on your bye week as well, Ryan?
Bye week for me is always a nice time. I get to, you know, this job's great, great job. It's demanding and get to spend some time with my kids. So looking forward to that. Playing dad for the week.
Spoon?
I'll just be roaming around the streets of Vegas. You know.
There you go. He's not making that plane. He's going to stay here.
Yeah. You know, I'll probably just bounce around, sleep in some parking lots, you know, whatever.
Boone's very careful. No one knows his plans.
What I always do on the bye week.
Yeah, family.
I just love that the two of us
bounce around Las Vegas.
I love that the two of us, it's Spoon that is clinging to Vegas. I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to go home and spend time with the kids.
No, no doubt. Do y'all hear that? I don't know what they're still doing out there, but I don't think I want to know. They were having a party down there for a while.
Yeah,
I'm going to get to go see my family and my new niece who was born a couple weeks ago. So I'm very excited about that. We'll still have coverage for you on PackersNews.com, though, especially wrapping up this Packers versus Raiders game and then heading into the bye week. Everyone else, take a few days off as well. Take a breather. Kind of reflect and focus on other things besides football. And then we'll come back next week and we'll do it all again as we get ready to head to the Mile High City. We're going from Sin City to Mile High City. I'm just ready for my own bed, though. Guys, I'll let y'all sign off. Thank you. As always, this has been the Green 19 Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.
Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.